Jeff Mendenhall fill in and give us a presentation on the methods to improve HD radio coverage. Jeff has spent most of his 45-year career in the broadcast industry. He has always had a passion for radio and television broadcasting and, in particular, high-quality FM broadcasting, where his many contributions have made the broadcast industry's best-known experts on FM transmission. Mr. Mendenhall has also had a major impact on the design of modern FM transmitter power amplifiers, including many innovations in high-efficiency, high-power single-tube RF amplifiers and solid-state transmitters for digital HD radio. The result of his work and the efforts of the engineering firms that he has led have made measurable gains in broadcast radio quality over the past three decades to keep radio competitive and alternative with alternative digital media. Jeff is currently responsible for the research and application of new technologies to Harris radio and television transmission products. He has authored over 40 technical papers, including the chapter on FM and HD radio transmitters in the 8th, 9th, and 10th editions of the NAB Engineering Handbook. In 1999, Jeff received the NAB Radio Engineering Achievement Award, recognizing his many innovations and contributions to the broadcast industry. And he has recently been named Engineering Fellow by Harris Corporation, and at the NAB 2010 show, Jeff was recognized with the NAB Best Paper Award. He holds 5 U.S. patents for broadcast equipment, and Mr. Mendenhall is a registered professional engineer. He is a member of the Association of Federal Communications Commission's Engineers and a senior member of the IEEE. Please welcome Jeff Mendenhall.
Okay, thank you, Jason. Okay, good afternoon. It's a real pleasure to have the opportunity to address this group this afternoon. Glad to be back in Madison again. It's been a while since I've been here as a presenter. So this afternoon, I want to talk a little bit about, I actually have a lot of things to cover here, but a lot of topics related to improving HD radio coverage. And so we're going to go through the need for speed, so to speak, all the way down through various methods of combining what's practical, what's not practical, some new ideas on how to reuse equipment you may have to get some increase in digital sideband levels without making a large additional investment, and finally talk about HD radio signal quality measurements. So the goals of increasing HD radio power, obviously, is to improve the reliability of reception, particularly the multicast channels where there's no fallback to analog. Better building penetration, particularly on portable and desktop radios that don't have very good antennas. And better mobile reception. Better reception on handheld devices. And of course, a lot of major broadcasters I talk to feel a real need and urgency to make sure that the listener's first experience when they get an HD radio is a good one and not one full of dropouts and a bad experience. And as we see more radios coming into the market, we want to make sure that the experience that the listeners have is positive and drives the expansion of HD radio receivers. So the questions might be, how much do you resize your transmitter plant for? Is it minus 14, 12, or 10? How high can you go? Can you use asymmetrical sidebands at some point to get more power that way? We know that all FM stations have now received approval to increase both sidebands by up to 6 dB to minus 14 dB below unmodulated FM carrier. The exception are the grandfathered superpower stations that may get less. The FCC does have a site where the superpower stations can take a look and see what they might be entitled to. I know of a couple that have gotten like, minus 16.9, those kinds of power levels. Don't know, I haven't been to that website real recently. I'm not sure whether they've addressed asymmetrical sidebands there or not and how those could be used with the superpowers. Many stations, of course, can increase the power of one or both an additional 4 dB by using asymmetrical sidebands. And of course, if you do that, you need to take that into account in properly sizing and selecting the transmitter. It's interesting to note that 90% of the commercial stations and about 82% of the non-commercial stations could increase at least one of their sidebands to minus 10. And 58% of the commercial and 50% of the non-commercials could increase both of their sidebands to minus 10. So when we turn up the HD sidebands, we pose a linearity challenge for the RF power amplifier. The higher AM component is going to require further derating of the amplifier from traditional saturated Class C operation. And with amplifiers that are running HD only, such as in a high-level combined system or a space combined system, without the linearizing effect of the FM signal mixed in, there'll be some additional back-off required there to improve the IMD suppression of these transmitters if they're going to be injected at a higher level, such as minus 10. So when you stop and think about it, at a minus 10 dBc or 10% injection level, the RF, the IMD products, RF regrowth, if you will, must be suppressed an additional 10 dB. At the same time, you're increasing the power by 10 dB. So this is a 20 dB improvement in linearity, and it's quite a challenge for the amplifiers. If you take a look at the RF mask, the NRSC mask for minus 20 dB sidebands, you'll see that the ratio of the OFDM sideband levels, which are right up in here at about minus 42 dB below the unmodulated carrier reference, the ratio is about 35 dB approximately. It's 34.5 actually, but the spectral regrowth here has to be more than 74.5 dB below the unmodulated carrier. So about a 35 dB ratio of desired to undesired. But as you increase sideband levels to minus 14, of course, now we have 6 dB more sideband level here, but of course the mask hasn't changed. So the IMD products have to stay where they are. So we've got an additional challenge there in linearity. And then finally, when we go all the way up to minus 10, which puts these sidebands at about minus 32, we now have a 45 dB ratio requirement between the desired OFDM sidebands and the undesired out of mask spectral regrowth. Well, high-level combining is one of the fairly popular ways of doing this, but it's really not practical for much more than a dB or two of increase. You can see at minus 20, your HD power is 2 kilowatts and your reject power is 4 kilowatts. Never really a very efficient way to do this with 90% of the IBOC power going to the reject load. But if you tried to go to minus 10, you would be putting the same amount of power in the reject load as what you're putting out in the main transmission line. So it would require a huge transmitter and it would be extremely inefficient. So let's talk about some ways to optimize an HD power increase. Most stations will want to take advantage of the full 6 dB increase in HD power. As Dave Hirschberger mentioned earlier, some may choose to stop there and not go further, depending upon how much interference they can tolerate into their analog FM signal. But we see a lot of stations will probably want to do the 6 dB increase. So some of the practical choices, let's see here, would be space combining, as they've done with at the minus 20 dB level, by simply increasing the power of the digital transmitter. Conversion of split-level or high-level systems to unequal combining of common amplification transmitters, and I'll say a little more about that, or common amplification of FM plus HD together through a single amplifier. And as I said, split-level or high-level combining is really not practical for more than about a 3 dB increase. Space combining is by far the most cost-effective way to increase HD power using existing antennas and an existing analog transmitter. So if your system has enough isolation and power handling requirements can be met for the increased digital power, this could be a good way to go. It's very obviously a very efficient way to combine. The main shortcoming, of course, is mistracking between the FM and HD signal levels due to differences in the radiation pattern of the two antennas. And even if a single array with the same elements is used to radiate the FM plus HD, but just in opposite polarizations, there still is some mistracking in multipath areas because the reflective polarizations add up differently. So why would this be important? Well, FM plus HD tracking is important to avoid digital into host interference at the higher HD injection levels, and for some of the same reasons that Dave Hershberger again pointed out in his paper earlier today. The only way for these two signals, the FM and HD, to track perfectly, of course, is to radiate them together from a single antenna with identical radiation patterns. And this requires the FM and HD signals to be mixed together in a single transmission line to the antenna. And the most practical way to do this is common amplification of the two signals in the proper ratio. So let's talk about upgrading a space combined system first, though. A 6 dB increase means the transmitter power on the digital transmitter is going to increase by 4 times. So we need some headroom in the transmitter itself and in the antenna system. We also are going to need additional isolation between the analog FM transmitter and the digital transmitter. And that's going to need to be increased dB for dB, directly proportional to the amount of power increase in the digital transmitter. The exact isolation requirements, of course, are going to be determined by the turnaround loss or mixing loss of both the analog and the digital transmitters. The higher turnaround loss means less isolation is required in the antenna system. Turnaround loss is what I define to be the ratio of the incoming interfering signal mixing in the transmitter compared to the outbound intermodulation product. So if the mixing loss is 6 dB, the intermodulation product will be 6 dB below the interferer coming in. And you'll find that in, tube transmitters, or depending on how the solid state transmitter combining is done, that turnaround loss can be as little as 6 dB. In some solid state transmitters that use corporate combining techniques, the turnaround loss can be much higher. It can be in the 20-25 dB range. The power ratings, of course, of the multi-station systems have to be taken into account, and Bob Surrett touched on that a little bit as well. So if we look at space combining of two transmitters, here's an existing FM transmitter. We have a 500-watt transmitter now. All of a sudden, that becomes a 5-kilowatt transmitter. The isolation is going to have to go from 30 dB to 40 dB with the given amount of turnaround loss. It turns out that ferrite circulators are fairly easy to implement on the lower power digital transmitter, but oftentimes those transmitters may not require that much additional isolation because they have high turnaround loss inherently. The problem really is in the analog transmitter, which may not have good turnaround loss, and where the cost and complexity of the isolator becomes more difficult. So a good way to solve this problem is to have an antenna system with very high isolation. Just, you know, I realize you can't read the numbers on this chart, but it's just to show you that, you know, something that may not be obvious. Let's say you have a 5-kilowatt transmitter here, and it's rated for 2 kilowatts of digital power, digital only, at minus 20 dBc. If you try and use that same transmitter at minus 10, that is, you increase the coupling of it to the antenna, or you change the antenna gain, you may find that you can only have about 1,700 watts usable at minus 10. So why is that? Why does the transmitter get further derated? It's because as you increase the content of that transmitter, the mixing ratio, its intermodulation products have to be driven down another 10 dB from where they were. So there's some additional back-off required, even on a digital-only transmitter, to stay within the original mask. Okay, a few words on common amplification. This is where, in a modern system, you would have the E2X transport stream coming into a digital exciter, which would create both the FM and the HD internally within the exciter. Analog component, digital component in the correct ratio, and output them together into a single amplifier for amplification as a common amplified signal. And of course, there's the opportunity for mixing products between these two signals. However, there is also a linearizing effect of the having the large fixed envelope analog signal present. And I like to compare this. The analogy is, you know, the highly nonlinear tape head in an old tape recording machine where you have a very large 100 kilohertz bias signal swinging the head through its magnetization curve, and superimposed on it is a tiny analog signal, which is what you've linearized. And actually, that analogy holds true here for linearization of RF amplifiers. So what that means is that a common amplification amplifier can actually produce more power output than a digital-only amplifier. The peak-to-average ratio is lower, and the linearization effect of the FM signal helps. So upgrading a common amp system just basically involves turning up the power on the amplifier, and you need more headroom to do that. Key advantage is the ability to use a single existing antenna and have identical radiation patterns and perfect signal tracking at all locations. The power rating of the transmitter increasing from minus 20 to minus 14 with a standard crest factor reduction would be approximately 70% of its minus 20 dB rating. So that's to say, if it was rated at 10 kilowatts at minus 20 dBc, it might be rated now at 7 kilowatts at a minus 14 dB. About 85% of the minus 20 dB rating could be achieved with additional hybrid crest factor reduction. And if a common amplification transmitter doesn't have the headroom to go to minus 14 or minus 10, the addition of a second transmitter, just equally combined in a 3 dB hybrid, often offers a good option there. For one thing, a combined system would provide full backup of your FM and HD. The second thing is that because of the backoff involved to get to minus 10, let's say, nearly full FM analog power could be achieved with either transmitter alone by simply reducing the HD injection level back to minus 20 dBc. So you could essentially maintain your full analog coverage with only one of the two transmitters operating in a emergency situation. With high-power common amplification and some of the new high-power single-tube transmitters, we can reach up into some pretty high power levels. You can see that with dual transmitters, even at minus 10, we can get up into the 33-kilowatt range or 47 kilowatts at minus 14. This is another eye chart here. This is a chart that we periodically update for all of our transmitters. The main thing to remember here is it's color-coded, and right now I have the minus 14 is kind of highlighted. That's a point of interest, but there's three columns here. One's the common amplification, total power output. The middle blue one is the FM analog component, and the kind of the orange or brown one there is the IBOC content. And so it's important to understand that you need to meet your analog TPO, so you're going to need more combined power, and as that injection ratio goes up, the difference is more substantial. There could be a possible 30% increase above these power levels at minus 10 using hybrid crest factor reduction in the signal processing. So, you know, all of the figures we put in our chart assume a minimum of 3 dB of headroom below the NRC mask of 74.4 dBc, and they're all measured with the now industry standard technique of modulating the FM 100% with a 1 kilohertz monaural tone, and that tends to bring up the inner modulation products more than what you'd normally see with average program content. They would typically be lower. So this is a pretty conservative way to do it. All the ratings are, of course, based on integrated RMS power, and typically we use thermal or bolometer type instruments to measure that. Now, here's the important point. As I was saying earlier, minus 20 dBc, a transmitter rated for 10 kilowatts is providing 9,901 watts of analog and 99 watts of digital. So it's almost within the rounding error of the rating of the transmitter. Is it a 9 kilowatt or is it a 10 kilowatt? It's only a small amount of the power is in the digital sidebands. But at minus 10, a transmitter rated for 10 kilowatts now is providing only about 9 kilowatts of analog power and 900 watts of digital power. So this does become significant in terms of the power measurement and the selection of the transmitter for a given TPO. So to achieve 10 kilowatts of analog power, the transmitter would need to be rated at about 11 kilowatts to include the 1 kilowatt of IBOC using common amplification. Now, here's a kind of a new idea, which is conversion of existing split-level common amp systems. And the idea here is to try and find ways that a station can get some increase, maybe not all the way to minus 14, but maybe 3 dB more. And remember, if for every dB you increase the HD radio power, you're going to get more than 1 dB effective benefit in the coverage as compared to analog because of all the gain in the way the signal is coded. So the idea here is to reconfigure a split-level system or a high-level system into an unequally combined common amp system. So in this case, the analog FM transmitter is replaced by an FM plus HD transmitter. But now the sidechain transmitter, the one that's already running FM plus HD, has its injection ratio readjusted to be the same ratio as the main FM plus HD transmitter, and they're combined in an unequal ratio because one transmitter is smaller than the other. It turns out that if you do this correctly, you get the ratios right and you have the same injection levels, you don't have any reject power. You basically deliver all the power to the antenna system. And the one tricky part of this is, well, can we do real-time adaptive correction for the intermodulation products of two different types of amplifier technology when they're combined? And the answer is yes, we can do that pretty effectively. It kind of averages the two, and the end result that you're concerned about is the combination of the two that goes out to the antenna. So here's an idea of a system that was currently running at minus 20 dBc. There's a Z16 transmitter which is putting out about 3,900 watts of power, 6 dB combiner. So the total TPO possible here is 20 kilowatts, 17 of it coming from the analog transmitter and the other part coming from the split-level transmitter. If you were to change the combining ratio slightly, to 6.9 dB, or you could just adjust the transmitter ratios, but I adjusted this to take full advantage of the transmitters. It turns out that what was a transmitter that was rated at about 3,900 watts for split level now could do about 6 kilowatts of FM plus HD because we've dropped the injection level of the HD back to minus 14 dB on this transmitter. And the new HPX40, which is capable of doing FM plus HD at minus 14 dB, if it was adjusted to 24 kilowatts, the combination now could provide 28.8, almost 29 kilowatts of FM, 1,200 watts of HD, a total power of 30 kilowatts. So you can see you can get up to some fairly high power levels by just switching out one of the transmitters and readjusting the ratio. I think it's... some of these fixed combiners can actually be readjusted for different coupling levels fairly easily. And of course, if you're using something like a dihybrid, then you have complete flexibility in adjusting the coupling ratio. The same holds true for a high-level system conversion to common amp. It works pretty much the same. Typical combining ratio might be 6 dB. It turns out that you can get, once again, a lot more power out of the digital transmitter by converting it to common amplification. The peak-to-average ratio goes down in the transmitter, and so its power rating comes back up. The back-off is not so severe. So those are two interesting techniques, and if you have a situation you want us to look at, just give us a call. Our application engineering department will be glad to go through the equipment lineup you have and come up with a ratio and a suggestion and see if it makes sense for you. Another technique to combine signals is high-level filter plexing. This is a filter that was proposed by Myatt, and actually I've worked with one of these and measured it. It's basically a very sharp-tuned filter bank with hybrids on each end. The filter is tuned sharply enough that it passes the analog FM signal but not the HD sideband, so it has a very sharp slope. And the idea is that the analog input comes into this hybrid. It is passed through the filter equally and recombines here. The digital input comes in to this port and is reflected off of the two filters and appears at the output. So this is an alternative for some situations where you can do high-level combining if the transmitter has quite a bit of headroom. Actually, it started out to be about 20% loss, and now with some recent design improvements, I understand, I saw Derek Small in Washington last week, he says he's got the insertion loss down to about 11% for the analog transmitter. The typical insertion loss for the HD signal, worst case is about 1.4 dB on the one side, but in the middle of the channel, it's more like about 12-15% in MP1 mode. This is obviously an application where the existing transmitter has enough headroom to make up for the combining. The caveat is that the sharp-tuned nature of this filter does imprint a lot of time delay distortion on the analog signal. And so digital pre-correction, linear digital pre-correction, can compensate for the linear distortions to the analog. It actually works without pre-correction, but you could find the total harmonic distortion to be up in the several percent range above 10 kilohertz modulating frequencies, and the stereo separation degrades. Don't know whether the listeners would really hear it, but obviously if you do time delay correction on it, you can get the numbers back down into the tenths of a percent and pretty much in line with what we expect from analog. Another approach is another type of high-power sharp-tune mask filter, and this is one that prototype was built and tested by ERI. This is a concept where the filter is not tuned quite as sharply. It's tuned around the entire FM plus HD signal, so the skirts of the filter kind of hug the outer side bands of the HD-OFDM signal. And the idea there is that you can drive the transmitter out of mask by up to 8 dB and then filter off the intermodulation products with this filter. Typically, they have about 12% insertion loss. There is some impact to the digital the quality of the digital signal. At the time that we tested it, I didn't have the ability to measure the MER. But I did measure the bit error rate, and the bit error rate was fine. The filter delay response was just within the Ubiquiti recommended maximum group peak-to-peak group delay specs. But now we have some other tools to measure that. But anyway, that could be another option for some stations. Talk a little bit about the HD radio crest factor, and this will tie in beautifully with what Dave was saying earlier. So the peak-to-average ratio is the PAR. It's high for HD signals compared to constant envelope FM, which has no peak-to-average ratio. And because of this, the amplifiers now can't run in saturated Class C mode. They have to be backed off into Class AB. Quasi-linear mode. So a digital-only transmitter that's used for separate amplification must have higher headroom in it with proportionally more back-off because of the high PAR of this signal. It's something in excess of 6.5-7 dB, even after conventional crest factor reduction. So to improve the amplifier utilization, the PAR is reduced by intelligently clipping. And these techniques are then followed by restoration of the amplitude and phase of the reference carriers that guide the receiver equalizer. The average PAR of an FM plus HD radio signal is typically measured by a statistical process called complementary cumulative distribution function, and this is built into some of the newer spectrum analyzers. This is where the instantaneous peaks of the two signals, the vector sums, are averaged over some number of samples. The PAR will determine the RMS power capability of the transmitter to meet the RF mask based on peaks that occur about 0.01% of the time. So this will be a familiar curve like what Dave showed this morning, where we're looking at the CCDF of a signal at minus 14 dBc. This is an FM plus HD hybrid signal. And at the 0.01%, it's about 2.8 dB. And the point here is as we increase the injection level to minus 10 dBc, now the peak to average goes up to almost 3.9 dB. And again, that's the reason why the transmitter has to have both the headroom on the positive side and why we get concerned about what the receiver limiters are doing on the negative side, where the modulation depth is increasing. So the common amp systems obviously have to have more peak power capability, and the PAR, as I showed you, depends on the mix of FM to HD. Standard crest factor reduction is done in the X-Gen, doesn't take into account the summation of the FM with the HD in the common amplification system. Hybrid crest factor reduction can be applied to the signal and accounts for the vector addition of the analog signal with the HD signal when the two add together or subtract together, as Dave showed in his vector diagram. It is possible to get up to 33% improvement in the average power handling capability at minus 10 dBc and about 16 dB at minus 14. Hybrid crest factor reduction techniques, of course, only apply to common amplification systems. In an all-digital system, it's standard crest factor reduction of the digital signal. And one thing that people forget to mention, you know, you hear some pretty big numbers, well, you get a 33% increase, but when you do hybrid crest factor reduction, you remove some of the RMS value of the signal, and so you really need to turn up the injection ratio to make up for what's removed. And of course, that puts further pressure and stress on the PA, so there's a little bit of a diminishing return there. Here's some idea of what hybrid crest factor reduction can do in two different modes, the MP1 mode and the MP3 mode. You can see that at minus 20 dBc, it really doesn't do a whole lot, about 9 to 10% PA utilization increase. But as we go up to the higher levels, minus 14, you can look at 15, 16%. And then at minus 10, it gets to be really big, something in excess of 30% possible utilization improvement of the PA. And you can see here, like at the MP3 mode, with standard crest factor reduction, it's almost 4 dB peak to average ratio. And with aggressive hybrid crest factor reduction, you can reduce that down to around 2.8 dB. So that's where the 33% comes from. Another technique is use of asymmetrical sidebands. I think this one's pretty promising. It turns out that even though the content is not exactly identical in the upper and lower sidebands, it is receivable. The HD radio signal is receivable with either sideband. And so because of the redundancy in the information, it's feasible to have unequal sidebands. Operating with unequal or asymmetrical sidebands could allow some stations to increase their power beyond the minus 14 dB, at least on one side, while protecting an adjacent channel on the other side. Now, any power increase in only one sideband, of course, doesn't bring the full improvement that raising both would bring. In fact, it doesn't even bring half the improvement that what you might think intuitively. The benefit is going to be dependent on multipath and fading. But, you know, for example, a 4 dB increase in one sideband might provide an improvement close to increasing both by 2 dB. And this is going to vary depending upon the situation. Again, it has to do with the fact that if both sidebands are present at the receiver, there's some additional coding gain, and you don't get the full benefit when they're asymmetrical. But anyway, it still is a viable technique to use. It's estimated 90% of the stations in the FM commercial band and 80% of non-coms could get to a minus 10 level using this technique. The sideband generation typically would occur in the X-Gen. It could occur external. We've already implemented a first-generation asymmetrical sideband code load for the FlexStar exciter, but there's more to come with some ongoing work that Ubiquiti is doing. But right now, we actually have a new screen on the FlexStar exciter where you can go in there and set your sideband levels. Let's say you set them to minus 10, and then you can subtract off 4 dB from one of them. You can make one of them minus 14 and the other one minus 10, or anywhere in the range for that matter. It could be minus 20 and minus 17. So that's already available, and a few stations are starting to use it. Now, if you do this, what's the impact on the power rating of the transmitter, and how would you size it? So I tried to put together kind of a simple chart here. If the sidebands are equal and they're at minus 14 dBc, that's a total power. It really means that each sideband is at minus 17. Together they add to minus 14. That's the combined. That's 4% of your analog power, and that's the combined peak-to-average ratio of about 2.8. And I'm saying here, let's start with minus 14 and say the transmitter's rated for that, so it's rated at 100% of its power. So if you were to go to minus 10, then you would, on one sideband and minus 14 on the other, then the combined equivalent sideband power is minus 11.5 or 7%. The PAR has jumped up to 3.42. And the power rating of the transmitter would now be 86% of what it would be at minus 14. So if you know what the power rating is at minus 14, you can derive what the new power would be by turning up one of the sidebands additionally. And we've got these scaled to agree with the NPR Labs IBOC Power Allowance Calculator. Actually, that calculator has now been converted into a very nice tool that's out on the NRSC website, so you might want to check that out. Okay, now moving in a totally different direction, on-channel gap fillers and translators. So single-frequency on-channel gap fillers are where you have two frequency translators offer another tool to improve HD radio coverage without interference to others. So both gap fillers and translators can be HD only or hybrid FM plus HD. And asymmetrical sideband techniques can be used either with gap fillers or translators. So back to what I started to say there, when you have an on-channel gap filler, that's where the main transmitter and the gap filler are on the same frequency. So call it a single frequency network or an on-channel booster, it's all the same idea. Now, part of why this works so well for HD radio, a lot better than it works for analog, is because of a thing called the guard interval. Perfect reception of the OFDM signals can be maintained in areas where both the original and secondary signals are actually equal to each other. The DDU ratio is zero if the differential delay between those two signals can be maintained within what is called the guard interval of the digital signaling system. And in the case of HD radio, it's 75 microseconds. So if the guard interval is met, you can have perfect reception with really any ratio between the desired and undesired signals. If you can separate the signal strengths of the desired HD signal to the undesired HD from the booster by more than 4 dB, then the guard interval is no longer important. You can still decode the HD radio signal if you can maintain a 4 dB difference. And this might be feasible where you can take advantage of some terrain shielding and directional antennas. So the effect is somewhat liken it to the capture ratio that we all know from analog FM reception. If the gap fillers must be located, they should be located so the antenna patterns are set up so that the guard interval is always met within the areas where the primary and secondary are within 4 dB or less. But location of them to take advantage of terrain shielding can greatly expand the area beyond the guard interval. And an example of this would be, if I go back to this picture here, if you were to go look at the main signal out beyond the gap filler out here, there's a time delay between the main signal and the gap filler, and there's processing delay here. As long as these two delays are accumulating together behind the gap filler and around the sides, you can pretty much go as far as you want to go. But as you start to come back from the gap filler towards the main transmitter, where the delay is increasing on the gap filler signal while the delay is decreasing to the main, this is where you run into the problem of not being able to stay within the guard interval. So here's another diagram that shows, you know, a scenario where you have main site coverage here. Maybe you have a piece of terrain here. In this area that's terrain shielded, you really don't need to worry about the guard interval, but anywhere out here where you can see the two signals together, you have to be concerned about that. And of course, you have to be concerned about analog to analog interference as well. So there's been some talk about HD only gap fillers, and you know, where there's sufficient terrain to protect the primary and main analog FM signal from interference by the secondary signal. You need to realize that even with an FM booster where you have precise time, amplitude, and modulation alignment of the main FM signal to the secondary FM signal, it's impossible to eliminate a significant type of multipath distortions in FM analog reception where the two signals are overlapping or about equal in strength to the receiver. I mean, it's possible to, through careful time alignment adjustment of the system, to set up contour areas where the two add up constructively, but there's always going to be areas, especially, you know, when you're traveling between the two, away from one and towards the other, where you really can't fix that problem. So it's been proposed that there could be gap fillers transmitting HD only without the analog to solve this problem. But then another problem is created, and that is, what happens to analog reception near the digital-only gap filler when the digital signal presented to the receiver, the analog receiver, is far above what the normal ratio would be and could be actually above the signal strength of the FM? And at what point do you have intolerable digital end-to-host interference? So there's been some recent tests that indicate that some analog receivers, particularly the newer ones that are designed for FM IBOC, FM plus HD, with the narrower filters that Dave was talking about, you know, could take up to 10 dB of digital overdrive before the analog is wiped out. But certainly on older receivers, that number could be the opposite. It could be minus 10 dB. As fact, as you heard, you know, even with a standard minus 10 dBc ratio on some of the older wideband receivers, there's already degradation at that point. So it remains to be seen, you know, depending upon individual receiver differences, whether this is practical or not. And we're going to be doing some tests later this year to see how this all works and what the trade-offs are. There's three approaches that I'd like to present on how you could do gap fillers. First is a separate synchronous X-gen modulation at each site that will transport E to X stream to each site. Separate synchronous digital up conversion at each site with transport of a high bandwidth digital IF that represents a snapshot of the FM plus HD signal from the main transmitter. And the last one is an independent receive and retransmission at each site without the need for any data connection. And each one has its strengths and weaknesses. So this is what the E to X block diagram might look like. You have transport stream coming in to an X-Gen OFDM modulator, some digital signal processing, pre-correction for the RF amplifier, and the output, of course, is on the same frequency as the main station. Of course, because there's no RF input, you don't have anything critical in terms of isolation here. There is a GPS synchronization requirement, and there's a requirement for the the new Ubiquiti E2X transport stream that has data pack that's stamping so that you can precisely align the modulation data on every transmitter, you know, regardless of shutdown and startup and buffer filling issues. You have to be able to time align the modulation exactly. And so the advantages, of course, are the host versus a gap filler can be time aligned. You can actually introduce a delay into the main station to allow the signals to be time aligned somewhere else in space. And you get fresh digital modulation and error correction at every site. The disadvantages are the cost of transporting the E2X to each site, GPS synchronization, and the possibility of licensing requirements for additional X-Gen modulators. The additional transport cost to add, you'd have to, if you wanted to do a hybrid gap filler with this technology, you would have to have a separate FM analog synchronous booster at each site. And so that would require transport of the FM plus the time alignment. One possible way around that is to use host audio extraction, and this is something that we do have available in FlexStar to extract the FM modulation, but then you still have the issue of time alignment. But then there's also the argument that time alignment of the FM may not be that important anyway because of the other issue of constructive and destructive interference if you don't have terrain shielding. The second approach is taking a digital snapshot, digital IQ, of the FM plus HD signal from the main transmitter and transporting it out to each location where you do a digital up conversion to the carrier frequency along with pre-correction for the power amplifier. And the frequency out is, again, the same as the main transmitter. The advantages here are that the host and gap fillers can be time-aligned, both the FM and the HD. Everything can be time-aligned. No need for additional X-Gen modulators. And you have the ability to do hybrid FM plus HD and at the same ratio only, though. Because, remember, each gap filler is going to be an exact replica of the main transmitter. Disadvantage is primarily the high cost of transport bandwidth. It's going to take about a 45 megabit signal bandwidth to transport the digital IF. And the additional cost of a second digital IF to provide FM plus HD in a different ratio than the host transmitter. And then the last one is the idea of receiving the signal off air with an antenna, bringing it in and converting it to some type of a digital IF and doing some signal processing on it and then outputting it on the same frequency. Now, obviously, you need to take into consideration the isolation between the output and the input. However, you can reduce that significantly by using a technology called echo cancellation that we have leveraged out of our television products. We actually have these types of systems operating in the digital TV world. But the idea there is that you can null out on the receiver the output of the transmitter to some extent through adaptive echo cancellation. And we can also do shaping through filtration. You can do things like changing the ratio of FM to HD or even doing asymmetrical sidebands. So the advantages of this one are simplicity. You only need AC power at each site. There's no GPS requirement because the frequency synchronization is inherent. The ability to adjust the ratio of FM to HD individually at each site. The ability to pass asymmetrical sidebands. The primary disadvantage, and it is a big one, is the time alignment offset reduces the guard interval protected area because you have not only the transport delay, 6 microseconds a mile roughly through space from the main to the gap filler, and then you have additional processing latency within the device itself. However, we can still output a signal from this that's within the 75 microsecond guard interval. And time alignment impact on the analog FM, we have no way to deal with FM modulation alignment with this technique. It's going to suffer whatever the processing delay is in the device. But nonetheless, if you can sight it correctly, it could be a pretty powerful technique. You could take the same technology and say, well, if we just change the output frequency from F1 to F2, now we have a translator. And it becomes a more powerful technique with the translator because using pretty much the same hardware and the same filtering, you can now reduce the isolation requirements from the input to the output. You don't have to worry about guard interval anymore because you're outputting on a different frequency. You don't have to worry about the FM modulation time alignment. But by using the same type of signal processing in here, we can do things like we can adjust the ratio of FM to HD individually at each site, so we could change the injection level up or down at each translator site. We can do asymmetrical sidebands individually at each site. And it's very simple with only AC power required. Disadvantages, just like the other one, it needs a good received signal-to-noise ratio. You're not getting fresh modulation at each site, so you got to have a good enough received signal-to-noise ratio to have a reasonable signal to process and repeat. Okay, and the last thing I wanted to talk about is HD radio quality measurement. With the advent of adding filters, like mask filters I talked about, shaving off intermodulation products, filter plexing, combining FM plus HD signals, adding time delay and amplitude distortions, driving amplifiers harder, all these things can degrade the quality of the digital signal before it ever leaves the transmitter plant. And so last year, NRSC asked a subgroup to form and come up with a measurement technique. So a group of us from all the various manufacturers, along with Ubiquiti, and Dave Hirschberger played a role in it, Phil Schmid from Nautel, and people from Broadcast Electronics, all took part, along with Brian Kroger at Ubiquiti, and we worked through a process or technique called MER, which is nothing new. It's new to radio, but it's a technique that's been used in the digital TV world for some time. It seemed to be the best choice for an HD quality measurement. This is a measurement of the digital signal to noise ratio of the data bearing and reference carriers within the OFDM signal. Why is this better than BER? We have had the ability to measure the bit error rate for quite some time. That was built into the original Ubiquiti test receiver. But the thing about bit error rate measurements is that they fail rather abruptly. It's like the cliff effect. You can degrade the signal close to the edge and see very few, if any, errors, and all of a sudden you go over the edge and the errors go through the roof. So we were looking for something that gives the engineer more of a grayscale diagnostic view of the problem, so you could go through the system and tweak things where there's a problem to reduce the impact of the problem in various parts of the system. So because of the simple constellation that's used in HD radio, QPSK, it's just a four-point constellation. The MER is acceptable. It's actually quite low signal-to-noise ratio compared to digital TV, where there's much higher constellation, 64 QAM, for instance, where you have to have something in the range of a 33, 34 dB signal-to-noise ratio. Here, a 14 dB signal-to-noise ratio is quite adequate. So through some simulations and some other work, we came up with that point as being a good point for quality leaving the transmission plant, which leaves enough margin for further degradation between the transmitter and the receiver and lets the receiver equalizer have enough range left in it to deal with those problems. So It's a, you know, the HD radio QPSK signal is pretty simple. Here's a, you know, what we're looking for is we've got four points in this constellation in amplitude and phase, and the crossing, the axis crossings are here. As long as you don't have points falling across the axis, you're not getting errors. And so this is a 22 dB MER with no noise, and then this is the 14 dB MER constellation, which is about a CD over N naught of 68 dB. You can still see that there's no errors crossing the line. In fact, if you get down to 12 dB, you maybe see just a few points crossing the line. Of course, at 4 dB, you have a mush, and you have a lot of errors occurring. And it's kind of interesting to note that, and this shows you why MER is pretty valuable. This is the column for bit error rate. And so when you start up with an MER of 18 dB, you have no errors. And you come all the way down to 6.6 dB, and you still have no errors, and then it fails at 5.5 dB. So the point that was picked was at about 14, right in here. And that may be subject to change in the future. The only thing that would drive that number, say that we'd want to reduce that, is to allow for more peak hybrid crest factor reduction and clipping of the signal to get better power amplifier utilization. That's a trade-off between MER, which is in-band intermodulation products produced by transmitter nonlinearities, versus the desired. So to kind of wrap up, we covered a lot of different subjects here. I guess the things to take home with you and remember are, you know, high level and split level really isn't practical for more than a couple of dB increase. Lower loss filter plex combining may be feasible in some situations, depending upon the equipment on hand. Space combining is, space combining is a very efficient way to go, but it requires, you know, 10x increase to get to minus 10 dB and a simultaneous 10 dB improvement in RF intermod. So that's a bit of a challenge for the transmitter. And higher isolation is going to be required for space combining, typically about 40 dB with the typical turnaround loss. Common amplification is going to require some additional back off from minus 20 to minus 14 to minus 10. Real-time adaptive correction combined with hybrid crest factor can help reduce the back off up to 30% or more. Split level and high level systems can be converted to combined common amplification. I should say unequally combined. It could be equally or unequally combined, but that's one I think is quite interesting. Common amplification with two combined transmitters and 3 dB hybrid is good because it gives you full backup for both your analog and your digital, and allows you to have full analog power even with one of the two transmitters down and still have HD on at minus 20 dBc. Asymmetrical sidebands can permit the maximization of your HD power without interference to others. And the on-channel gap fillers will allow spot area improvements without causing adjacent channel interference. I mean, all these three things, the asymmetrical sidebands, the on-channel gap fillers, and the the choice in injection ratio are all related to being good neighbors with your adjacent channels. And digital FM plus HD will offer new opportunities, particularly to serve areas that now only have analog service. And the HD quality measurement, MER, will assure transmitted signals leave enough headroom for the receiver equalizer. And just some acknowledgments for some of the folks at Harris and Ubiquity and National Public Radio. So with that, I guess we've got time maybe for one or two questions yet. I either put you to sleep or I didn't leave any doubt. Thank you for your attention.